Under Tower Peak by Bart Paul. Read for you by Richard J. Brewer.
Don't ask me nothing, then I won't have to tell no lies. Huckleberry Finn. When the cockpit got too warm, he crawled out of the plane and sat next to it. That was better. He rested with his back to the wreck beside the little pine and looked down the canyon across the tops of the snow-covered trees to the empty country from which he had come. At first, he had been anxious, staring up the big peak, looming over everything, poking through the storm clouds, the northernmost point of this range. He turned to look at the wing sticking straight up through the snow and at the numbers painted on the wing, and didn't recognize them. He had been glancing down at a map on his lap when he felt the first jolt of the downdraft, and the last thing that he remembered was that the altitude was less than 12,000 feet. When he came to in the wrecked cockpit, he iced his head wound with snow until his hands were numb, and then took an inventory, assessing his chances just as he always had. He thought of his wife and son, and wondered when they were coming for him. There had been so much snow piled on the door he almost didn't have the strength to push it open. Sitting outside was better now, but he was still warm. He snuggled down, feeling as if he were rushing through the air at 200 miles an hour, like the time his balloon hit a wind shear in the jet stream as he soloed at 27,000 feet over the East China Sea. He was hot now, and his head ached, and he remembered that his wife had died a long time ago, and that he must have another one somewhere. He laughed and took off his T-shirt. His son would never have the sense to find him up so high on the mountain to bring him home. He'd leave that to the pros. He looked back at the peak, but its spire was hidden now in the swirling white. Chapter 1. Early in the season, we rode up to the forks to fix the trail above the snow cabin. The winter had been good, and the aspens had leafed out down in the canyon at the edges of the meadows. Above the roughs, up in the tamarack pines, it was shady and cool once the trail got narrow, and the only sounds were the steady scuff of the horses' hooves as they kicked up little puffs of dust, and the clack when an iron shoe struck a rock as they climbed, the rush of the creek off in the timber, and the breeze through the tamarack limbs. The little mule just up trail swung back and forth across our path on her lead rope, wasting her energy trying to get abreast of the front horse, and would have tired herself if she was packing anything in her slings heavier than shovels and saws. We got to the snow cabin by mid-morning and kept right on riding. It sat in the pines on a patch of boggy ground just below the forks and was only in dappled sun even at midday. In a wet spring like this, the walls would be mossy and the place full of mosquitoes and spiders soon enough. We had spent the night there one January when we were in high school on one of our wild expeditions, and were glad to have the shelter with the wind hammering over the pass. But our fire dried things out and made it livable inside. It wasn't built for summer anyway. The snow survey crews had stopped using the cabin years before. Now they choppered in, took their depth measurements and core samples, and choppered back out. Some cross-country skiers had flown in back in the 80s when heliskiing was the new hot ticket. They were going to glide down all the way from North Pass and spend the night in the cabin, then slog down over the roughs into Aspen Canyon the next morning, and hump it across the flat meadows all the way out to the valley. But it started snowing, and they missed the cabin in the trees, and froze to death. Their tracks showed two of them making crazy circles in the tamarack looking for it. One of those two was a pretty college girl, and she died just 60 feet from the cabin door. The body of a third was found far away down in the bare aspen, below the meadows, heading in the right direction, an easy few miles from the paved road. They never found the fourth body. That was all before our time. But it was that way more and more every year in the mountains. Too easy to get in, and too hard to get out. The door of the cabin hung lopsided on its hinges now, and city people had carved their initials on the logs. At the forks, we headed right, leaving the timber at the bottom of a rocky cirque, a big glacial bowl almost a mile across. Lester rode in front, leading the little mule with the tools. She was one of Harvey's new mules, and only half broke, so we wanted to put some miles on her before the season got rolling. We had the tools on her, so if she pitched a fit, she wouldn't damage our valuables. When she moved to run up on him, Lester would try to whap her across the nose with the end of her lead rope, but she got savvy and drew her head back every time. She was learning quicker than Lester. I rode behind, leading a big roan pack horse carrying our bedrolls and kitchen.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?